There's a fucking camel on 309!
It's the snow camel, the bringer of snowpocalypse. It is Friday, November 16th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics and the weather. Of course, the weather. Got to put in the weather this week. It was an absolutely insane snow day yesterday. It took me a six-hour commute to get home. We'll get all into that. In this week's show, House Republican Caucus, the incoming caucus. That's right. 90% white men. Democratic Caucus, 38% white men. One looks like one's holding on to the kind of last bastions of white kind of identity. The other one looks like America. AOC facing misogynist tweets after Hill staffer, quote unquote, reporter, sends photo of her wearing a dress to a Washington Examiner reporter who then proceeds to kind of like go after her. AOC's having none of that. Democrats pick up even more seats with Sinema. Sinema, is that your surname, Sean?
Sinema
winning winning a seat and flipping Jeff Flake's seat from Republican to Democrat. And Katie Porter flipping an Orange County Republican stronghold. Porter was a student of Elizabeth Warren. Seems I know that name from someplace. And ran an unabashed progressive campaign supporting Medicare for all, expanding Social Security, and going after the banks. And you know what? You take a little peek about what's happening on Capitol this week. Looks like Democrats are in for a little bit of a rude awakening. It's a new day. Here come the millennials. And they're not sitting down. And guess what? They've got social media accounts, too. And the fires continue to burn in CA as a death toll mounts in California. It's absolutely devastating what's going on out there. And once again, we're seeing our climate future. But I don't want to go too far into the depths of despair yet. In today's PA Focus, we're actually going to probably do kind of all stuff in one segment today, with the exception of the last call. But the Proud Boys and other alt-right groups are marching through Philadelphia this weekend. And the PA AFL-CIO and organized labor denounced their march as counter-protest planned to shut it down. The question is PA's AFL-CIO's and PSEA's favorite son, Brian Fitzpatrick, going to be down there marching with them? I don't think so. And in today's last call, yes, got to see Bruce on Broadway this week. I'll tell you a little bit about that. A little kind of celebration for my brother-in-law's 50th birthday. We took him to New York, had a show, had some food at the 9/11 memorial. And we will talk about the snow camel. Yes, the snow camel right here in Berkesey, PA. I guess that's officially the mascot of winter 2018-19, the camel. Actually, it's technically a dromedary, apparently, but snow dromedary just doesn't kind of roll off the tongue very well. So we're sticking with camel. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Also, tune in to the ricksmithshow.com for, his show, his nightly show. It's fantastic. You can stream his TV show at live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Want to remind everybody, as we move into giving season, keep us in mind. We can't do what we do without you. Right. Without the membership base of Raging Chicken Press, we cannot fund what we do. We just had a bunch of the big bills come due, like our web space, renewal of some of our SEO programs, some security issues, things like that. So the expenditures are going out. And now more than ever, we need you to help keep Raging Chicken Press going strong. Because if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. We got to learn from the past here. You can help support Hole No Punch's homegrown progressive media by becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. you're not ready to become a member, just go to RagingChickenPress.org, click on that big blue donate button on the right sidebar, and send us your donation in whatever amount that you want. $100, $200, that'd be great. Now that the 2018 midterm elections are in the bank, we're kind of looking and thinking about where we go from here. What is our focus going to be? What kind of reporting are we going to do? Where we need to put our emphasis? And we're looking to hear from you. So if you got some suggestions, what you would like to see on the podcast, you'd like to see in the pages of Raging Chicken Press, just email me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Love to hear from our listeners. Love to hear from kind of contributors. Love to hear from anybody who's got some ideas about where progressive media needs to go. We're all ears. Remind you, in order to make all that happen, we need members. Patreon.com/RCPress today. So, Sean, it is a snowpocalypse.
I was getting worried we weren't able to do this morning. You know, I thought you were going to be stuck, stranded on the highway. Yeah. You know, I had to sleep in your car overnight, and there goes the podcast. Well,
dude, 6 hours. 6 hours it took me to get home.
So, I would say I would not be able to say the same thing. I spent 6 hours at the bar yesterday.
Yeah, that's about the same. Yeah, Sean, I'm sitting there, and like Sean's like messaging me. I'm sitting in my car, literally in this one spot for almost 2 hours. And so Sean's like, "Oh, Mo, you're still at home? Wow. Well, I've been in a bar since whenever. If that makes you feel any better, I'm like, yeah, it makes everything worth it right now."
So I ended up going out yesterday, taking pictures of the Capitol, and you know, while I was outside, you know, just some like the cliche snow spots here in Harrisburg, yeah, to get photos of, all the state workers got out at once at like 1:30, and it was just instant gridlock on all the major roads going in and out of the city. And it was just like, oh, this is fun. Just standing in traffic, taking photos while everyone has to like wait an hour to cross a bridge, to go to the West Shore or get on 83 and stuff like that. And no, I had a couple of friends who had to come up from York to Harrisburg yesterday during all this, and it took them like 7 or 8 hours to get home.
Yeah, it was insane. I thought, just yeah, here's a perspective on this is the beginning of my commute yesterday. All right, so my office is in Lytle Hall, which is just building on Kutztown University campus. It's like the furthest building north. It's really in the middle of nowhere. I like to call it Legoland. Some people call it Lytle House on the Prairie, right? It's kind of way out there. In order to get to the building, you got to pass the two tanks in front of the National Guard off, you know, place. But barracks, not barracks. It's an armory, but
whatever. ROTC.
Yeah. So if you're coming out, so you come out Lytle, and at the end of this like windy Lytle lane to get to the main street to kind of, you know, leave to go home, there's a hill, right? It's kind of like not super steep hill, but it's like, you know, a downgrade that kind of goes to a stop sign. And this is like notoriously bad, right? It's the kind of place that like literally we've had countless numbers of arguments with our administration about how dangerous that hill is and why they need to get out there early and often with sanding and all this other kinds of stuff. Like, we actually had to bring them plans from Maxitawny Township at one point because the university was claiming that it's not our responsibility, it's a township thing, blah, blah, blah. So we actually brought them the maps, the Maxitawny maps, and showed them that was their responsibility to do this based upon where the property lines are. Like, so, you know, what, there's a long history here. So it's a dangerous thing, especially when it gets snowy like this. So I'm coming out, and I know this, right, because I know that this is a dangerous spot. So I'm getting up to the edge of that kind of that downgrade where the hill is, and I look down, and there's two cars that had smashed into each other at the bottom of the hill, right? Doesn't look like there was, like, major damage. It just looks like, you know, someone was stopped waiting to get out. The person behind him, it was too slippery. They tried to stop and couldn't, and they slid into the car. So there's two guys, students, who are kind of standing outside their cars, and they're just basically kind of like making sure each other's okay, and they're kind of pointing over to a parking lot, you know, just kind of say, hey, why don't we move our cars over there so we're out of the way, right? I mean, they're doing exactly what you should do in this kind of situation, right? They recognize they're in a bad spot. They make sure they're okay. They look at the damage. They say, let's move our cars out of here so we don't, you know, cause any other obstructions. So I'm at the top of that hill. So I'm like, okay, this is dangerous. So I put on my hazards and I stop, right? So I'm sitting there. I got my hazards on so that people behind me know that, okay, there's something up here. So I'm sitting there and I look at my rearview mirror and this car comes out. The student is kind of driving behind me. I got my hazards on and he's coming up and he speeds up and passes me, right? It's just a small two-lane street, right? He starts to pass me and I lay on the horn. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? You know? And I'm laying on the horn in part to say to him, what are you doing? But also to warn the people that are standing by the cars at the bottom of the hill. Right. So the bottom of the hill, they look up and they're like, no. And they kind of like jump back. His car can't stop. Right. It's probably going at this point, probably about a good 20 miles an hour. Right. Can't stop. Bam. Right into those cars. Right. And it's like smashed right into it. And the guy's like, and his car was, I mean, it was a hard hit. And then he gets out of the car and he looks at me. Right. And I'm like, what are the Joes doing? So that was the beginning of my commute home. Right. And then it went downhill from there. So it was like that. So, yeah, it was something else. It was something else.
Yeah. I can't believe it. Like, so yesterday morning I got up early, went to the gym and I went to get a coffee right before the snowstorm happened. And I was surprised, like, none of the roads were pre-treated. Mm-hmm. And
same in our area. Yep. Exactly.
I'm just like, man, either the schools are going to get this one wrong and we're going to get nothing. Or the city's going to get this one wrong, and we're just going to get, like, none of the roads were touched up. Nothing could get plowed till last night. And, yeah, it was I guess it caught everyone off guard.
Well, I think, you know, look, maybe everybody in PennDOT was just kind of following John Micek on Twitter, right? And they were going with the Micek principle. You can't do anything until there's snow on the ground.
And then, so this actually got into a big argument with a couple of people from Erie that I know, and you're like, pre-treating the roads is a waste of money. I was like, listen, we're not from Erie where we used to get getting like 10 feet of snow dumped on us. You know, we're used to getting like 3 or 4 inches of slush and,
right,
you know, having that stuff. Like, either way, there should have been salt or brine on the ground. So this stuff was melting. I mean, it just stuck right away. And I'm just like, oh boy, this is not going to be good.
It was bad. No, and like in Erie, they're, you know, in part they're right. If you're going to get like feet and feet of snow, it's not really going to help you out that much, right? But you're absolutely right. None of the roads in our area were pre-treated at all, usually when they put the brine down. And, you know, and out at Kutztown, it was like, you know, it was funny. This storm was a crazy one because it was, at Kutztown at least, it rained for about, you know, rain / sleet for maybe like 15, 20 minutes before it started really heavily snowing. So there was like that icy glaze right underneath. And then all the snow got dumped on top of it. It was just a disaster.
Oh no, it snowed out here. And we were like thinking, everyone was calling for like 1 to 3 inches. And it, we ended up getting like close to 8 to 10 in Harrisburg. And this is the type of thing where, you know, are these forecasters going to be wrong in the future as these storms happen because of climate change? I mean,
yeah.
You think about it, it's like there's so much moisture in the oceans now.
Exactly.
Well, by that, I mean, it's like it's a negative feedback loop. The warmer the oceans get in the summertime, the more energy they store. And that's why it's usually warmer down by the coast in the wintertime. So as all that energy gets released in the wintertime, it's just going to be providing so much more heat and fuel for these nor'easters to start dumping 10, 15, 20 inches of snow on us on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, it's the heat and the moisture, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, and get a lot of more of these extreme winter events like we saw yesterday becoming the new norm.
You know, I would really love to have somebody that could talk about some of this stuff come on for an interview show at one point, because, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about this morning as I was telling you, like, hey, look, we got to record a little bit later because I got to go get my mother-in-law a windshield wiper that broke and like my kids are home from school and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I was talking to some of my students the other day. I said, well, what do you think it's going to be like? And I was like, you know, look, The predictions are saying 1 to 3 inches. I said, you know, this is one of these early storms that I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. And I said, frankly, if you think about the weather patterns for the past, you know, since, you know, really July, it's been just like tons of moisture in the air. The rain has been incessant, right? And part of that, you know, that whole I don't know what you call it, like the feeder of that, you know, the heat and the moisture that is kind of being pumped into the air for all the rainstorms and stuff. I said, you know, I could see this turning into like a significant snowfall. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. I mean, like, but I, and I always said to them, I'm like, you know, but what do I know? But it'd be really kind of interesting to talk to somebody like a meteorologist or something like this who's actually studies this stuff and is not like a denier of climate change. And to talk about the ways that the models, like how the models are constructed and how, to what degree they're taking, you know, taking into consideration what's happening with climate change. Because you can imagine if the models for this kind of storm is based upon historical data and the historical data is being constantly overwritten because of changes in the climate, we could just be in this pattern of not being able to really predict what the effect of these storms are going to be for a while.
Yeah. So I guess that's a good segue into some of the climate change. Some of the climate change stuff that's been happening on the Hill this week.
Yes, indeed. It is a climate of a different sort that has taken place in D.C. It's unbelievable. Start us off, man.
The Sunrise Movement.
Yes. That's a great place to start.
The Millennials and the Sunrise Movement. 51 protesters got arrested in Nancy Pelosi's office this week, the next House Speaker, I shall say, and pushing her.
We're going to have to get back into that again, but okay, that's
pushing her on accepting a new Green Deal type plan and combating climate change head on. And one of the people in there leading that fight was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC. And Ocasio-Cortez had a bit of a dust up this week with Frank Pallone. And just as we were going on, 40 Sunrise Movement protesters, all like 18-year-olds, were in Frank Pallone's office giving him a hell of a time.
There you go.
To start pushing him on climate change. And this is the type of stuff that we're going to need to happen. You know, one of the things that, you know, she has social media accounts and these kids have really well-tuned social media accounts.
That's absolutely right. And so, I mean, just run through this. Like one this week, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, this week alone shows you that what we fingers crossed. What I hope we can expect going in. And because everything from, I mean, she was basically on her Instagram account this week. She was posting like, you know, the videos of going through the tunnels, like the secret tunnels under the ground. I actually learned about those tunnels the first time I got arrested in Washington, D.C., blockading the Rayburn office building. Right. Because we was like, you know, we're not going to let these folks out to be able to get over to the Capitol in order to vote for increased funding for El Salvador and death squads. Right. So we were kind of locking our arms and everything. And we had some people come over and tell us that, like, yeah, you know, they can actually get there by going on through these underground tunnels in order to get there. And we're like, whatever, we're going to do it anyways. But she, the fact that she displayed that, right, and she was kind of narrating her experience of kind of becoming a legislature, as you know, on the one hand, it's kind of like, you know, this is just kind of what you do in social media. But I think it also demystifies that whole kind of like, you know, that process and what this is like. So it starts from there, and then it goes to her participating in that sit-in and that protest in Nancy Pelosi's office. And then, as Politico was reporting this week, a fight broke out, and so I'm reading from Politico right now, in a closed-door meeting of House Democrats over climate change as a powerful veteran lawmaker fought with freshman star Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other members-elect over the creation of a special panel for the issue of climate change. Now, it says, like, New Jersey Representative Frank Pallone, incoming chairman of the powerful Energy and Commerce Committee, backed by a number of other committee members, slammed the creation of a new climate panel. According to multiple sources in the room, Pallone argued that his committee and other existing panels within the House could take on the issue aggressively. So, again, you see this kind of power struggle happening at that level, him wanting to hold on to how you're doing this with all the traditional lobbyists and the money and those concerns. And you have not just AOC, but other members elect coming in saying, nope, we are going to go. We're going to bull by the horns here. This is our future. We're going to take a much more aggressive approach. If that's what we're going to see, man, we're in really good shape.
And it's also like the this week, Fox News was scaremongering with the new people that were coming in, Rashida Tlaib, AOC, and a couple of other ones. You know, all women of color who were elected this year, saying, trying to scaremonger these their viewers and saying these people support socialism and Medicare for all and free college tuition and stuff like that. My friends were like, yeah, this is, they're actually, Fox News is doing better messaging for the Democrats than the Democrats are doing for themselves.
Excuse me. Exactly. Exactly. It's, some of their tweets, I mean, I saw some of the tweets, conservative tweets and Facebook posts and things like this. I'm like, you know, I just kept on saying to myself, thank you. Thank you. Like the new like Democrats are coming in. They want free college tuition. They want health care for everybody. They want child care for everyone. They want
they want to fix the student loan debt crisis.
They want paid family leave. They want I'm like, check. You're right. This is the best reporting you guys have done in a long time. Like, you've actually got the messaging correct. This is fantastic.
And the funny thing is, it's like a lot of the Fox viewers support, you know, having free Medicare and stuff like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
They want to take away your Medicare and make sure everyone has Medicare.
I know, exactly right.
Yeah.
They want to basically say, hey, you people with Medicare, you got it pretty good. So let's make sure everybody's got it.
You know, AOC faced some sexist attacks this week as well, which is a Hill staffer sent a photo of her from behind of her wearing a black dress and sent it to a Washington Examiner reporter. And the Washington Examiner reporter was trying to poor shame her, saying that she's actually doing well as a person, you know, because she's wearing a black dress mm-hmm. and a suit coat.
Yep. Well, there was, and this has like this, the buildup for this too, as well, right? Is because, you know, there was,
she said she can't afford.
Right.
Yeah. And then
that she couldn't afford. Let's finish the sentence. So couldn't afford housing this week, right? Because I mean, yeah. DC is one. Again, it's one of these perfect examples about how people are being priced out of major metropolitan areas across the country, right? And how this disproportionately affects millennials coming in. And she was kind of like overt about that. Instead of hiding about it and things like this, she said, "Look, we're going to be fine." Right. But like, I'm also being kind of realistic here and looking at the cost of it. Can't afford this until I get this, you know, get the salary. And so they've been on her all week about that. And so they take a picture of her dressed nicely and says like, OK, oh, look at this. She's just rah, rah, rah.
And then the funny thing is, like, people on Fox and Friends said something along the lines of like, oh, you should be like some of the people who sleep in their offices. And then Ocasio-Cortez shot back. Oh, you mean like people who use public housing?
There
so you support
go.
Public housing is what you're saying.
Yeah, what's awesome is like, you know, those folks, they think, you know, they can't play the game as well as she can, right? In part we're talking about different generational kind of response. They think they're, when they tweet that stuff out and when they say that stuff out, they think that's going to only their people. And she's like breaking right through that bubble and be like coming right back at them.
Yeah. So her messaging is on point. And then we have more pickups.
Yeah.
In House and Senate this week.
Yeah.
Which
is
awesome.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, this has been an interesting, you know, I was hearing this kind of debate back and forth about, you know, about the metaphors of the wave, right? The blue wave. And Sarah Kendzior on her podcast with Andrea Chalupa this week, they were talking about, or she was basically saying, is like, you know, I've always disliked this metaphor of the blue wave, right? In part because waves come in, they crash, and things like this, but then they eventually recede. She was like, I like to think this about more about the kind of like our entire kind of like water system that over kind of generations that fundamentally changed the landscape simply by running over rock and through dirt and all this other kinds of stuff. I thought that was kind of a really cool way of thinking about it, because this kind of like rise, this blue tide, whatever you want to call it, is really kind of has this potential to change the landscape about how the Democratic Party operates both inside and outside the Beltway.
Yeah. And like, you know, so California this week, Katie Porter mm-hmm. Won her seat. She beat Mimi Waters out in Orange County, which is a huge Republican stronghold for the past like 50 years. That whole entire county went blue.
Yep.
Like there were only two districts in that were blue. The other four, the remaining four of the six, all went blue. And that was a Republican stronghold for decades. you know, that, and she ran on expanding Medicare, Social Security, universal health care, and going after the banks. She was a part of, she was a student, a literal student of Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, also back here at home, people really aren't talking about this, but what's happening in New Jersey.
Yeah. No is, kidding.
Is fundamentally different. I mean, Tom MacArthur, who was the architect of destroying the ACA, was voted out this week. Andy Kim, again, another person who's not a bald, white, middle-aged white person with a goatee, like a Matt Briette lookalike, you know, was defeated.
Yep.
You know, like this, you know, like you see that, like, I mean, you look at New Jersey, and New Jersey was gerrymandered with a Republican governor, with Chris Christie. And, you know, like, I mean, they broke a lot of these gerrymanders. And I, as a wave perspective, yes, I believe that this was a blue wave, like in that sense. And yep. Some people are saying, well, the Democrats only picked up 30 seats and it's not that much.
No, but it's at
the amount of people who
36
had to
last
out.
Night went 36 as of last night. And then it's like we're up and it could go as high as 40.
And, but the amount of people, like, yes, Republicans had their elections that have like 70 and 50 seat swings. But the people, these seats were so gerrymandered.
Yep.
Where you needed such a high voting turnout, like historically high turnout, to happen to flip these seats.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
No, exactly. I think it's incredible. And I don't know if you saw what happened in, you know, in just to give you the perspective, like we said here, the House Republican caucus is 90% white men, is increasingly the party of kind of like really kind of white nationalism.
People.
Well, and, you know, it's got to be even more because it's basically that it's that white nationalism, that idea about white identity combined with patriarchy and combined with class. Right. That's what that is all about. Is the real House. I mean, literally in the actual numbers of people and the way that that caucus looks now and compared to the Democrats, it just is that way. And which is going to create this kind of more reinforcing, like a self-reinforcing bubble. So like I was looking at I don't know if you saw this, but what happened in Kansas this week, right? Where there's, I'm trying to get, let's see if I got this. There's a Leavenworth County Commissioner, Lewis Klemp, right? Basically he was basically at this meeting, right? And he's like, so I'll just read you this one part. The Kansas County Commissioner is facing calls to apologize after telling a black woman that he is part of the master race during a routine public planning meeting. The remark was made on Tuesday by Leavenworth County Commissioner Lewis Klemp, a white man, and seemingly directed at a woman presenting for an architectural firm. And it has been branded as racist and so on. She was this black woman who came in. And he basically says, I don't want you to feel like I'm picking on you because we are part of the master race, he said in the meeting. You have a gap in your teeth you have a gap in your teeth, whatever. You're the whatever, something else. So don't ever forget that. But basically, that kind of logic, right, being spoken out loud is like what we're seeing as the last gasps, right, of kind of when this kind of identity comes to forward. And the Republican Party is that's the bastion for it. That's their last little home. That's the island that they're sitting on right now. And that's not going to be able to stand. Right. Increasingly in the states, especially just exactly what you're saying, even in these gerrymandered districts where there's no Democrats had no business winning some of those races, like under a normal election season. This is a whole different ballgame.
Like Staten Island, one of the whitest white districts you can get in pretty much all of our
racist,
country.
Right.
Yes. Went to a Democrat. And it's, you know, I mean, and it's the white nationalists that's going to be their ploy to take over the Republican Party.
Well, they already have. Let's be clear.
Well, yeah. No, but to make it more mainstream.
Well, no, I would argue that they've already done it, right? This has already been because that's who they are as the party. The difference is now that rhetoric and the kind of what the underlying assumptions are now going to have to become more and more explicit. So the kind of the white gentlemanly kind of Republicans who have been kind of, have been the public face of white nationalism for a long time now, right? Now they increasingly have to be overt in their defense of kind of white privilege and white patriarchy. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was going to say this weekend, we have this happening right here in Philadelphia.
Well, go ahead. Cause I want to come back and since we're talking about everything in one section, go ahead. Yeah.
This is something. So there's this organization called Sports Beer and Politics in Philadelphia. We talked about them before. They're holding another rally in Philadelphia this week about protecting the Constitution, you know, and they have Proud Boys and other alt-right groups associated with them. And this was an organization where, you know, they had a rally, a Protect the Police rally back in September or August. Mm-hmm. And Scott Wagner was originally supposed to speak there. He canceled the last minute. Brian Leib, who ran for Congress, only got 7% of the vote, showed up. He spoke there to these people. This group right here, Sports Beer and Politics, is what white nationalists who are getting their foothold within the local Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And what they're doing is they're holding these Patriot Prayer style type rallies in Philadelphia, what they're doing on the West Coast with the Patriot Prayer groups, with Joey Gibson and stuff like that. And what they're trying to do is have these counter protesters come out. They want to pick fights and then use that, make themselves the victims in this, and use these fights as an act of political violence in order to attack the left. It's a playbook that they're using out on the West Coast. And it's the same thing they're using here in Philadelphia with this group called Sports Beer and Politics. The Philadelphia AFL-CIO and other organizations came out against this. They released statements this week condemning this protest. This protest is going to be taking place at the Constitution Center, but it's also across from the National Jewish Museum as well, a National Jewish Center in Philadelphia. And given what happened in Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago, there's going to be a lot of counter protesters showing up to this.
Man, it's good. You know, people are not going away, which is amazing to me.
Yes.
Amazing to me.
And I am the school of thought that no, we must be in the streets protesting these people. We shouldn't be holding counter demonstrations on the other side of town and ignoring that giving them their space to operate. It's time where we shut their spaces down and show them and tell them that they are not welcome in public if they're going to be outright fascists about this.
Yep.
I mean, what we saw in the in Baltimore this week with someone yelled "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump" at Fiddler on the Roof.
There you go.
I mean, like this, they're becoming more emboldened and we must stand up publicly to denounce this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Good thing. A good thing.
And that's what I have to say about the PA Pennsylvania side of things.
Yeah. I'll group a couple things together here for this. Cause I mean, been watching what's been going on in the California wildfires. I know we talked a little bit about that, a little bit up top, but the, what we're seeing, I mean, I don't know how else to really reinforce what we've been saying on this podcast for a long time now, is that we are seeing the effects of climate change now. And the fact that the death toll, last I looked, was over 60 from the campfire and the Woolsey fire. It's just devastating that those fires continue to burn. That firefighters, you know, once again, I mean, it's concerning to me that it's becoming normal to hear firefighters on the ground sit there and saying they've never seen a fire behave like this before. They've never seen this degree of heat. They've never seen this spread so fast before. And this is like, you know, three consecutive times of these major fires when they're seeing like, you know, fire tornadoes and everything like this. But this is kind of what we can certainly expect. And I think that George Monbiot had a really good piece in The Guardian this past week called "The Earth is in a Death Spiral. It Will Take Radical Action to Save Us." I just want to read a kind of a little bit of a thing from here. He says that, I don't believe that such a collapse, like a climate collapse he's talking about ahead, he says, is yet inevitable, or that a commensurate response is either technically or economically impossible. When the U.S. joined the Second World War in 1941, it replaced a civilian economy with a military economy within months. This is really an important point. As Jack Doyle records in his book, Taken for a Ride, quote, in 1 year, General Motors developed, tooled, and completely built from scratch 1,000 Avenger and 1,000 Wildcat aircraft. Barely a year after Pontiac received a Navy contract to build anti-shipping missiles, the company began delivering the completed product to carrier squadrons around the world. Right. And this was kind of before, obviously, all the advance of robotics and all this kind of stuff. What then Mambiot then says is, quote, the problem is political. A fascinating analysis by the social science professor Kevin McKay contends that oligarchy has been a more fundamental cause of the collapse of civilizations than social complexity or energy demand. Control by oligarchs, he argues, thwarts rational decision-making because the short-term interests of the elite are radically different to the long-term interests of society. This explains why past civilizations have collapsed despite, quote, despite possessing the cultural and technological know-how needed to resolve the crisis. Economic elites, which benefit from social dysfunction, block the necessary solutions. The oligarchic control of wealth, politics, media, and public discourse explains the comprehensive institutional failure now pushing us towards disaster. And I think that that is really, when you have that kind of perspective on our inability to act in politics, and then you see what was happening with this new kind of class of legislators that just got elected, and a far more progressive and kind of left-leaning kind of perspective, and people, frankly, who are going to be dealing with the long-term consequences of inaction much longer, this is all positive thinking, right? You know, the idea that the political will is now coming to Washington, D.C., which is pretty amazing. And I just want to put that, so that's in the climate sphere. But if you look at kind of what does it actually mean in terms of the long-term interest versus short-term interest, if you look at this past week, of course, Amazon announced where its HQ2, its second headquarters, are going to go. And they actually split that up into two locations. And, you know, frankly, as all the hype that was going on there, if you want to put money down about where those new headquarters were going to go, New York and D.C., right? I mean, you want to be close to political power and you want to be close to the media power. That's where you want to be, and that's exactly where they're going to go. And what's crazy about this, right, Amazon, one of the most profitable companies in the world, right, is basically going to be paid by taxpayers. Right, it's going to cost taxpayers $4.6 billion that they are paying out through tax abatements and a range of other kind of payments and tax relief and things like this for Amazon to come to these areas. Right. And with the idea that, well, if we don't pay them, they're going to go someplace else. And, you know, you've got kind of like millennial activists, right, basically saying, and so let them go. What are they going to bring? Minimum wage warehousing jobs, right? They're going to kind of ramp up kind of housing costs even higher than they are already. Let them go to someplace else. Fine. If they want to be in New York, if they want to be in D.C., they pay us, not the other way around. And that's that equation that is so out of whack in terms of what the interests are of that billionaire class of people like Jeff Bezos and Amazon and all their ilk, and what our long term interests are. And that is going to be the defining struggle, in my mind, of this next several years, right? And I think that has got to be front and center as we move towards thinking about the next round of elections in 2020 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as kind of way of kind of putting a button on that, I have to say that I don't know if you saw this or not, but Pennsylvania is actually putting forward a new energy plan called Finding Pennsylvania's Solar Future. And right now, I think is like Pennsylvania produces something like 0.1% or something like this of its energy through solar power. And now they're calling for increasing that to 10% by 2030. And that was interesting, right? The fact that you're seeing a plan moving forward for solar in the midst of an economy that has been dominated by the extractivism, you know, with fracking and the other kind of big oil kind of fossil fuel industry here. So I'm going to be really curious to see where this goes, and to see if we get a kind of a really vigorous embrace of this kind of policy by Tom Wolf, by John Fetterman, by the kind of newly elected legislators in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So to remind everybody, because the state of Pennsylvania is the third largest carbon emitter in the United States after Texas and California. And we are nowhere near the population of Texas and California. So we have a disproportionate impact on fossil fuel emissions and impact on lack of action on climate change. So it becomes all the more imperative that we move in those directions. Cool. Anything else you got going on, Sean?
No, nothing else is really going on.
Yeah, we're a little, you know, we're a little kind of off our normal game this week, everybody, as we kind of sent a little bit, because in part because the weather just went absolutely crazy yesterday, and my normal prep time, which I would take like on Thursday, just went out the window. It got a late start today, too, as well. So we're going to keep a little bit shorter today, but we will come back for today's last call just to get a little kind of fun stuff to, you know, close out the day. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that you can become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Become a member as little as $5 a month. This is how we keep progressive media going strong. We'll be right back after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's the last call, kind of, sort of. It's been kind of a weird show. We're just kind of like blowing through this today after Snowpocalypse and after we have the official mascot of the 2018-2019 winter season, the Snow Camel. The Snow Camel.
Did you get to see the snow camel?
I didn't, because the snow camel was long gone by the time I got home. Like, I got home when it was real dark. Snow camel was out on 309 in the snow in the daytime. But so I hope everyone who's listening to this right now has got a chance to see that on social media. There was a legit camel dromedary. On the side of the road, right by the Percussie, PA exit on 309. That's where I live. Like, that's the exit that I get off of. It was just hilarious. You're kind of just sitting there. You're like, what the what? Right, what's going on? People taking videos and posting this stuff to Twitter and everything. A camel. And that just basically was like...
It's
like
2018 in a nutshell.
Yeah, exactly. That just kind of summed it all up for me right there. There's a camel on 309, and of course there is. Right? Of course there's a camel. Why wouldn't there be a camel on 309 in a snowstorm? Right? I mean, it's like, whatever. But it turns out... Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it turns out that it was supposed to be headed down towards some show at the Philharmonic, I guess, in Philadelphia. It was for some kind of animal rescue place up kind of a northeast PA, I think, or eastern area, maybe. I can't remember exactly. But it was on its way down to get there for this the special show they were having, along as part of the some Jewish federation in Philadelphia. But lo and behold, it never got there in time because of snowpocalypse. So there you go.
I actually had a run-in with a camel a couple of times.
Did you now?
Yes.
Of course you did.
In college, while we were at Kutztown, we used to take some car rides through the very scenic parts of Berks County, going up towards Redding and Lake Onalani, mm-hmm. which is a man-made lake mm-hmm. for the water for the area. Mm-hmm. And we were driving around doing legal stuff.
Doing perfectly fine stuff you're supposed to do when you're driving around. Yep, go ahead.
Yes. And we came to a stop sign. We looked over once to our like right, and there was a camel right there. Like those things are huge in person,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, like, yeah. You never realize how big a camel is until you see it.
No.
Like,
no, you don't.
Up close.
They are enormous, right? And that was yes. like, if you looked at, you even see some of the video that people were in, the pictures that people were taking as with his camels on the side of the road. That's a big animal. That's a big animal. So glad to hear that made it home safely. And apparently you were telling me before the show that they interviewed the person who's owned it, said basically the truck got stopped or something like this, or was stopped.
I got stuck in the snow mm-hmm. and the guy didn't want to let the camel in the back of the thing in the back of the trailer that was hitched to the van for fear of getting rear-ended and having the camel getting injured. So he let the camel out on the side of the road.
Yep. Just to kind of like in the, go hang out with the cows for a little bit or something. No, so actually, that's kind of actually got like a nice reason why the camel was out there. Like at first, when we first saw the plot, I was like, what, where did that even come from? Like, you know, it's like, well,
so,
here you go.
Did you see the new, did you see the Gritty video that was posted yesterday?
I did not.
So Gritty, the new Flyers mascot, was out dancing in the snow. Mm-hmm. I guess by the art museum or something like that, mm-hmm. like catching snowflakes and bringing into it. It almost like, if you've ever seen, the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And it was like when they're at like the landlord's, dance recital, like the guy doing like the dance and everything like that. That's mm-hmm. exactly what it almost reminded me of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least some people were having fun with the snow.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun if you were driving in it.
Yeah, well, I have to say the coolest thing is, and I'm sorry I missed the original for this, but this was like my, you know, we got a dog, right? You know, and this was our dog's name is Potter, and this was Potter's first snow, and so my kids got to take him out into the snow and play in the snow, and he absolutely loves it. So it was like it was just kind of cool to see. And then when I got home, I took him for a walk, and he always waits for me so he can poop.
Well, he was waiting for a while.
Well, no, I mean, he went earlier, but he was just like jumping around, and it was kind of fun. And then we came back out and did some more shoveling after I got home. My daughter came out and we took him for another walk, and so it was just kind of nice. I was glad to spend some time outside because I really do love the snow. I don't like sitting 6 hours and like on the side of the road because people don't, you know, whatever. Am I getting that? But
it does amaze me how, like, I put a tweet up last night. I was like, you know, there's many things that Pennsylvania resembles when it comes to, like, southern states. Like,
this is one
driving
of
in the snow is one of them.
Yeah,
like,
it really is.
It's
unless you're in really specific parts of the state that are, you know, like you know, northwest of the parts of the state around Erie and things. It really is true. I mean, the roads are not built for it. People don't drive like they know what it is. And, you know, it's
did you see some of the pictures yesterday, the George Washington Bridge?
No, I didn't.
Was just gridlock. So the GW was just like completely gridlock end to end because of a couple of accidents that happened on the bridge. Uh-huh. So the traffic was so bad, people just left their cars on the bridge and walked home.
That's and then, New York for you. That's it. I'm done. I'm going home.
And then the Metro or the Port Authority closed with like thousands of people inside the Port Authority. They actually had armed security guards standing on the escalators, forcing people out of the out of the Port Authority because of the buses were just – there was no buses available. They were all just gridlocked in traffic.
Oh, man.
I mean, yeah, imagine – I just – it amazes me how, like, this caught everyone off guard.
Yeah.
Like
– yeah, it really did. I mean, it's funny. When I was sitting there when I first got in traffic – so after the, you know, the student accident that kind of happened right in front of me, I started to go home and, you know, so that kind of held me up a little bit. So I started to kind of drive home, and then literally like 5 minutes outside of Kutztown, it was just, I was just completely stuck in traffic. It was like stop dead traffic for, I was sat there for probably at least 45 minutes, if not an hour. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, so I texted or kind of posted some, you know, messages like, hey, look, you know, at least I got this snow to look at as I'm sitting here in traffic. And I send it back to our faculty listserv because, you know, the university closed, I think, at 3 o'clock or something like this. Right. And so I said, hey, just want to let everybody know, you know, I'm stuck in traffic, blah, 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 out of here. And then all these people, like other people started posting, other faculty members started posting it to the website and saying like, hey, is there places where, you know, where they can, there's a whole bunch of people that are stuck here. Where can they go? And so the university actually opened up and kept open some of the buildings to make sure that there was space for commuters who couldn't get home or couldn't leave to kind of – and I don't know if any people ended up staying the night or whatever it was, but it was kind of like, you know, it was –
yeah, at that point, might as well just get a hotel.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was getting, like messages from people that are also like, are you home yet? I'm not home yet. I'm like, no, I'm sitting here. Me too. But crazy. So that was, yeah, so that was that. But my big news for the week is this. So it was my brother-in-law's 50th anniversary, 50th birthday in August. And so my wife and I got him, well, all of us, so we all go together, tickets to go see Springsteen on Broadway, which was like, this thing was sold out. And we had to get tickets like ages ago in order to be able to just even get tickets for it. And basically, it's like this. It's a
solo. So was Bruce actually playing or no?
Yes, it was Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
So it's his Broadway show, right? And basically, what it is like, I don't know if you know, he came out with a book like last year or 2 years ago. And the book was set up basically so you have some of his songs, some of key songs and things like this in his lyrics. And the way they talked about it was kind of like, and the him kind of talking about what it kind of informs his music and that kind of thing, right? And the book is actually much more in depth than that. And this show was originally pitched as kind of like, you know, the Broadway version of that book. But basically what it was him basically telling stories about kind of going through his life and then playing some kind of, you know, some of his songs in conjunction with these stories. And he did it in such a way that, like, when you heard the song, at least for me, right? Well, all of us who were there, right? We're talking there. When you hear the song again after him telling these stories, it changes your entire perspective on the song, and much more in depth. But this is more the more important part is that, you know, he's going to be coming out with a live album. I guess I hope there's going to be a video of this too as well that is they're going to release. It was one of the most amazing performances of anything I've ever seen in my life. It's like the degree of reflection and vulnerability and pain and honesty and connection with his songs is like, I don't know how anybody comes out of that kind of thinking that, you know, anything but that, man, this is like a unique genius of a human being. And it absolutely incredible. That kind of like self-awareness and reflection and, you know, this is like it's 5 nights a week, right? That the show goes on, that how you do that with that degree of kind of vulnerability and craftsmanship and do this kind of performance in such a moving way every night. And this show has been extended like 3 times and all this kind of stuff. It was an amazing show. And the show closes in December. And so, I mean, I, you know, look, you know, to get tickets now is probably going to cost you like a crazy amount of money. But look for the recordings and stuff that going forward. And, you know, I've always liked Bruce Springsteen, but I was never like a Bruce Springsteen, like, you know, fanatic. I've never been to one of his shows or anything like that before. Always appreciated the kind of perspective on kind of working class America and kind of. Stories of the everyday. I've always loved that about his music and his lyrics. This show just blew my mind. So that was great. That was a huge thing. And so we went out there for the day, and we started off. And so kind of part of the deal for his birthday, we took him out, and we went to this Polish restaurant in the Polish area out in Brooklyn. I had this Ukrainian borscht, which was the single best soup I've ever had in my life. I'm just going to tell you that. And if I can, I'll put it up. I'll put the link in the show notes, hopefully, if I can remember to. But it was like, you had this like huge amount of food for like, you know, it was like for this lunch special, right? You know, you get the soup, you get these sides, you get this huge, I got this honey pork steak thing. And it was like $12. You know, it's like $12. It's like, you know, we paid $12 if you go to freaking Red Robin for lunch, right? I mean, this is like, oh my God, it was incredible. And then from there, we went over to the 9/11 Memorial, and I hadn't been there before. Have you been there?
I have not, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a must-see. It's so compelling. And you know what? I think my biggest takeaway of going to the memorial, I mean, other than just the sheer impact of the place and seeing all the names, and they put like all the names are kind of etched, or not etched, but kind of like punched, like metal punched in this in the rim of where the crater is or the two towers, and they're all kind of like punched through. There's a light behind them, so the light kind of like illuminates the names kind of from behind. And every once in a while, you see a name with a yellow rose on it. And we just thought, like, maybe you get these yellow roses and, you know, people put them in there to remember it. But no, it turns out that that's their birthday. So that every day when it's somebody's birthday, you've got, you know, part of what they do as part of this memorial is they go around, they put a rose in their name on their birthday. Stuff like that was so moving. And what I thought was so important about that memorial is it's very much very similar to the Vietnam Memorial, right? Given the kind of like the racist rage and the anti-immigrant sentiments and all this other kinds of stuff that we've had in this country since 9/11, and now it is at a, like a crescendo right now. That space makes it virtually impossible to like walk away with a feeling of hate, right? It is so much focused on the memorial of the people of their lives that were lost. So kudos to that. And then we saw Bruce that night, and then we came home. So, and then I went back to work in the morning. that was quite a night. So that was my big news of the week. Sean, you're having all sorts of laughter going on. So that must mean that Twitter is at it again.
I was watching. Yeah, I was reading something on Twitter. I saw a nice tweet. Yeah. You want to play by play? Is that the snow camel?
What? It's about the snow camel?
It's about the snow camel. Yeah. So Mysik was tweeting out about like more behind the scenes about the snow camel. And Fetterman responded, yeah, it's oddly like a scene out of Airplane.
Right on the nose. That's about right. Like, that's about right.
Yeah, so it was actually like really funny yesterday. So I went out taking pictures of the Capitol, of stuff downtown in Harrisburg, and my friend messaged me, he's like, hey, you want to come over to the Midtown? You know, I'm here. Like, no one – we're. So I walk in, and the whole entire happy hour crew is there. Like the state workers that I've gotten to know over the past 4 years. And I looked at it, I was like, what's this, happy hour or something? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And everyone just started laughing. It's like, yeah, well, it took us over a half an hour to get here.
Exactly.
From like 6 blocks away. And then what ended up happening was SP Plus, the private parking service that we have here in Harrisburg, they went around and started ticketing everyone at 3 o'clock because it's the permit time for my neighborhood. You have to have a parking permit to be parked here between 3 and 5.
Yeah.
So at 3 o'clock, SP Plus was just going around ticketing all the people that were at the bars.
Oh my God.
They had nowhere else to go.
Everyone should have gone out of the bars, over to their car, and flipped their car over on the side. I mean, that's what it should have, you know, that's what it should have done.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man. Well, hey, wouldn't be a last call without a little beer release news and beer news here. I do have to say, also when I was in New York, they had a little just outside of where the 9/11 Memorial is. They had a farmer's market that was just kind of set up there. And there was a distillery from just outside Albany, New York, called 1857. And they produced gin. Vodka. And they had some samples there, and I got a bottle of some of these samples that they had out there. But that was it was cool to see, because it's like, you know, again, it was another one of these like real kind of craft distilleries that is springing up. I left the bottle in the car. I was going to read you some of it, but I forgot about it until just now. And so shout out to them, an 1857 distillery out there just outside of Albany. Really good stuff. Check them out if you can. But Free Will, once again, has another bottle release. I don't know how they do it, to be honest with you. But that is going to be released tomorrow. And it is called Fenberry Sauce. It is a sour ale aged in oak casks with cranberries. And it comes in at about a 5.9%. And this is like, you know, it's meant to be the next staple at your Thanksgiving table, right? It's basically what it is. So here's a little read, on it a little bit here. It's named after the English word for cranberry. This barrel-aged sour ale was carefully blended to showcase the crisp tartness that accompanies the bog-grown fruit. Notes of cranberry skin, earth tannins, subtle oak make this pink-hued beer the perfect addition to your holiday cheer. It's available in both the 3 to 75 milliliter and 750 milliliter bottles, and in both tap rooms will have it beginning Saturday. That is tomorrow at 12 p.m. So I'll be there, hopefully to pick up some extra bottles. Hopefully, let you know what's going on with that, and so on. So that's my news for the week. Anything else, Sean?
I'm gonna be watching Eagles lose on Sunday. So
yeah, you mean again, right? I mean, just saying.
Yeah. So Ryan Costello, One of the moderate, self-proclaimed moderate Republicans is on Twitter the past couple of days, and he's been trying to relitigate the Supreme Court case that overturned all of the gerrymandered maps here in Pennsylvania, and trying to say that this was this election was won by special interests, and that this was rigged from the judicial Supreme Court and stuff like that.
Well, did you hear? Yeah. I'll just lay this in too as well. I just like put this in the side of like whatever. So I think I want to say it's the Washington Examiner. I might be wrong about the source of this, but there was some posts that were coming out today about what was it, Broward County that just got that down in Florida, because we didn't really talk about all the stuff outstanding.
Yeah, they handed their election results in 2 minutes late. And they're not. Yeah, I heard about this morning.
Right.
Well, and they're not accepting them.
Right. They're not accepting them. But here's the thing. So here's the spin that the right wing media are putting on this. Right. In some circles, they're basically tweeting out. So it's like, oh, the Democrats of Broward County handed in the election results late, so that the Republican vote counts that would increase the Republican totals couldn't be counted. Can you what?
You know, if people outside of this country, like if this election happened like any other like developing nation or like first world country,
and, any other nation,
yes, any
you don't need a modifier in front of nation, yeah, any so, other place.
if what happened in Florida and Georgia happened in any other country in the world, like the election shenanigans that were going on, like we would be calling on the UN, like the UN and others to oversee the unfair election processes that were going on.
Yep.
Like, I mean, this is like, yeah, like this is, I mean, yeah, we would be demanding like we would be calling these election results unofficial or corrupted and tainted and stuff like that. Like, yeah. And one of the things I am glad the Democrats said they're going to do, one of their first priorities is to have an overhaul of the Voting Rights Act or our voting system as their first top priority when they get to when Congress returns.
There you go.
Which is good.
Yeah. And I'd like to see like
automatic voter registration and like, you know, expanding the Voting Rights Act to the whole entire country instead of the different districts that were torn down in Shelby, in the Shelby case. So
right, I have to say, look, I'll say this again: one of the things that this is, the minute that you hear any kind of Democrat, like especially in the representative in Congress, right in the House, any of them kind of out there start complaining about how they have no power to do anything, right? You need to kind of like call them on this immediately, because what they have the opportunity to do, right, is to start passing bills, right? Not just Russia investigations. You want to do that? Great. That's fine. But you start passing bills and setting the agenda. So for number one, voter, like, again, exactly what you said, voter protections. You want to kind of like change the make sure that people have access to the right to vote, change the election system in such a way that you're not going to have this kind of nonsense that happens over again. You want to have a kind of Medicare for all bill. That's why you want to have free college tuition pushed forward. Right. These are absolutely critical bills that can be put forward. And then, yes, it may be true that once it gets to the Senate, the Republican controlled Senate, they're going to shoot it down. But that doesn't matter. That should not hamstring in your ability to pass this. Right? If anything you learn from the Republicans is that one thing they do is that even though that they could not get their kind of like repeal of Obamacare passed, that they went ahead and did that. Why? Because they're establishing an agenda. And the thing is that once you start kind of putting together bills and passing bills, even though if the end result is that that thing is not going to get passed, what you're working out is you're working out the details of those bills. Right? You're working out the specifics in law and policy about how those things get forward. So when you get to 2020, and if we do have Democrats in the White House, Democrats in the Senate, and Democrats in the House, right, you've already got your package, right? You're establishing the campaign now, right? And you're doing it on things that people actually freaking want, right? That's what we need, right? So, blah, once again. Anyways, anything else before we go to the order, Sean?
No, that's good. I'm good.
All right, man. Well, we're going to kind of leave it there today. Want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I hope everybody got home safely. I know that there's a lot of pictures and posts that are up there about some people getting in accidents, having to abandon their cars. I hope people got home safely enough, and then let's see if we can do something different next time we have a snowstorm. What do you say? What do you say, PennDOT? What do you say, every institution that's out there that has workers? Right? How about that? This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chinga Press. Thanks a whole lot for tuning in today. And we'll see you next week right here in Out the Coop. Until then, see ya!
Fucking cable on 309!